Very few stories have captured the public imagination so largely for so long. However, Greek mythology has proven itself impermeable to the erosion of time, and over, people find themselves captivated by the magic and the menace. Hello, and welcome to the Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want, and today, I want to talk about Greek mythology. So, guys, I recently read this book, The Song of Achilles, and I loved it so much. It's by Madeline Miller, and I seriously can't recommend it enough. It's just life-changing, truly. But after reading it, my interest in Greek mythology was briefly reignited, so I fell down this rabbit hole of trying to teach myself a bit more about it. And in doing this, I kept having like this weird deja vu feeling, and I was realizing that they all felt really familiar to me, and I was like, this is weird. I think in another life, I must have been an ancient Greek. That must be the only explanation. There's no way that it's because the stories are classics and have been written and rewritten and referenced so much that it would be impossible to exist in the Western world without internalizing at least some of it. But then I remembered that I read them all when I was younger because of this amazing book series called Percy Jackson, which I assume you all know or have heard of because it's not really underground, but if you don't, it's like edgy Harry Potter with like demigods in the modern world. And ironically, it's amazing and I think I should reread it. But when I was younger, I was really into all this and I actually did learn quite a bit about it. So anyway, the story's completely irrelevant, but I thought it would be a fun intro. Anyway, the point of it was to say that I'm doing this because it's almost like this cute little full circle thing for me, and that's kind of fun. Okay, but let's get to the relevant stuff. So making a podcast on Greek mythology is enormously vague, so for this episode, which may or may not be the only one I do on Greek mythology, I will be covering the origin story, I guess. And by this, I mean essentially like the Greek creation story, but I'm only covering the gods and monsters. I assume you've heard of it before in some form or another, and it'll probably be familiar to you when you're listening. The other thing I wanted to mention is this. This is mythology. Literally every source you go to is going to tell a different story. So this is going to be my interpretation, and I will take some creative liberty. After all, I want this to be entertaining. But it'll mostly be a blend of everything I've read. So it might be a little different from what you've heard before, and that's okay. You're not really going to ever get the same story. That's kind of the beauty of mythology. They never really get old because they're always a little bit unique. But guys, I think this is going to be really fun, so let's just get right into it. Well, sorry, there's actually one more thing. Because every major depiction of Greek heroes and divinities from ancient Greece depicts them as naked, like fully, or like naked with a tiny strip of fabric dramatically flowing that's very conveniently covering the private parts very precariously, I think that it's only appropriate that I draw from these primary sources and treat the story like they were naked the entire time. You know, it's what a good historian would do. One other thing, it's also pretty widely accepted that the ancient Greeks were really short. So, for the purposes of historical accuracy, just know that they are very short and very naked the entire time. Okay, well, with that being said, I see no reason to not get started. According to Greek mythology, at first there was only chaos, which encompassed the entire solar system. Until one day, there was Gaia, or Mother Earth, along with four other deities. These five deities, sometimes called primordial beings, in addition to Gaia, were Tartarus, the underworld, Erebus, the darkness that covers the underworld, night, the darkness which covers earth, and Eros, love. Together, the five primordial beings began to shape things. They separated the muddle into specific places and times, and it was their existence that paved the way for more creation. Soon, Night and Erebus got together and had seven children, Hemera, or Day, as well as Phos, or Light, along with a set of cheery quintuplets named for the states that they personify, Doom, Death, Misery, Deceit, and Discord. Sounds like a real fun bunch of kiddos. Especially since Discord would eventually give birth to murder, slaughter, battle, and crime. Damn, I'd love to go to that Thanksgiving. However, much more importantly, Gaia, being Mother Earth, was apparently so fertile that she gave birth to Uranus without any male assistance. Uranus became this guy, but I'm going to call him Uranus because I'm five and that's funny. However, Uranus's birth was much needed for Gaia because she had wanted a husband. And naturally, your son, which you gave birth to while still being a virgin, is clearly the best option. Alas, Gaia and Uranus get married. And Uranus, even though Gaia's like the OG and literally Earth herself, becomes king of the divinities. Which is like, king of everything? Gaia is much happier now, though. She's married and grateful that her creations have something to rule over them. And quickly, the two start to have some babies. Now you're probably like, whoa, two gods are gonna have some really pretty damn cool babies, right? Like, they gotta be really powerful, or like, really smart, or something. Well, their first three kids were monsters with 100 hands and 50 heads. Each. They were as big as mountains and absurdly strong. I think that's the universe warning us against incest. You think maybe they'd got it out of their system by then, right? Well, not exactly. Their next three kids were cyclopses, and these kids were given names. There was Brontes, which means thunder, then Steropes, meaning lightning flash, and my personal favorite, Arges, meaning shining guy. The Cyclopses do actually play an important and interesting role in Greek mythology, eventually supporting the Olympians and making Zeus's thunderbolts. Gaia and Uranus had a few more weird monster children, but eventually we get to the actually important children, the Titans. So Uranus hates the Titans, and he would shove each one back up Gaia following their birth. Okay, to be honest, only one of the sources I read said that this was the case, but you know what? My podcast, my rules. So Uranus shoves his children back up Gaia's uterus, because like, what the actual fuck? Who came up with that? Moving on, there were 12 Titans, 6 girls and 6 boys. And sorry that I'm about to butcher their names, but there was Crius, Phoebe, Coeus, and Iapetus. These ones had no important or notable responsibilities or roles to play, so they're pretty much irrelevant. Then there's Themis and Rhea, who are earth goddesses. Oceanus is the god of the sea, and then Thetis was his sister and wife. And then Hyperion was the god of the sun, and Theia was his sister slash wife. And finally, we come to the only one that's actually relevant, Cronus, the brightest, strongest, and cleverest of them all. If you followed all of that, hats off to you, because I don't even know what I just said. Anyhow, understandably, Gaia was mad about the fact that her husband had been shoving her babies back inside her. But she was also worried, as she had watched Uranus descend into tyranny. This is not what she had intended when she married him, and she did not intend to let him be. By now, Gaia had quite the army of powerful children, and so she asked them for aid in taking down Uranus. And Cronus jumped at the chance, agreeing to attack his father for her. So, Gaia made Cronus a huge sickle out of flint, and told him to use it in taking down his father. Gaia then informed Cronus that he was to attack Uranus when he came down to find Gaia in order to, engage in intercourse with her? And Cronus was like, Mom! But he went along with the plan anyway. Soon enough, Uranus descended from the sky in order to mate with Gaia. However, little did he know that he had quite the surprise in store for him. Now, if you were curious, Cronus is actually still inside Gaia's womb at this point, which I don't really get the logistics of. Like, did Gaia stick her very big sickle up there? Yeah. I don't know. But when Uranus arrived, Cronus began to fight from inside Gaia's womb. He reached out with the sickle and started attacking Uranus, or whichever part of Uranus was closest to him and slash Gaia's womb, so this meant that Cronus ended up castrating his father. Chop chop. But he was victorious! And after snipping his dad's junk, he threw them into the sea triumphantly. Greek mythology states that from his blood, many monsters were born. monsters the size of mountains, but when his genitals fell into the sea, the water foamed up and produced Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty. Her name, Aphrodite, even means gift of the sea foam. For some reason, castrating his father was all Cronus needed to do to become the new king of the heavens. With his new power, he freed his 11 brothers and sisters, giving many their own dominions to rule over, and he married his sister, the Titan Rhea. Yeah, that happens a lot. However, before he could take over as king of the entire cosmos, old Papa Uranus was able to get in one more word, and told Cronus that one of his sons would overthrow him one day, the same way that he had overthrown Uranus, setting into motion the events that would bring about the gods of Olympus. So now Rhea and Cronus follow in their shared parents' footsteps and go on to have a heap of their own kids together. However, Cronus is riddled with fear because of what his father told him, and he can't get past it. He can't let his children live, except his children are immortal. He knows that he has to do something. So naturally, his first thought was just to shove the kiddos back up Rhea, like father like son, but conscious of what happened to Uranus, he decided to take matters into his own hands. He couldn't trust Rhea with the single most important thing in his life. So he decided to shove the kids up his ass. Nah, guys, I'm joking. He ate them. Yeah, he ate them. He did that. Yep, Cronus was swallowing his kids whole, but since gods are immortal, all his kin were just vibing in his tum. And every time Rhea gave birth to a new child, he would just swallow another. After 5 children together, though, Rhea was not impressed with her immature husband. Who can relate? She decided it was time that one of her children maybe doesn't get eaten. She was really out there being like, is that too much to ask? And so Rhea goes on to find Gaia, who strangely had found herself in a very similar situation. Now, I don't know how or why, but Gaia and Uranus had patched things up and gotten back together. So, you know, everyone's favorite father-daughter duo was back in business. But Gaia, girl, let me tell you, you can do way better, trust me. But anyway, Rhea goes to find them and she asks them for help. For she's pregnant again, and this time, she wants her baby to live. Gaia and Uranus agree to help her, so when she starts to go into labor, giving birth to her 6th son, she flees down to Earth and hides in a cave, giving birth to her son out of sight from Cronus, before he even knows she's in labor. She then gave her son to Gaia and returned back to Cronus, locking herself in her bedroom, screaming out in fake agony, pretending to give birth, before coming out and greeting Cronus, with her so-called newborn baby in her arms. However, little did Cronus know that the thing in Gaia's arms swaddled in a baby blanket isn't his son at all. No, it's a baby-sized rock. But Cronus, too distracted by his desire to eat his child, doesn't notice. He doesn't notice when Rhea hands it to him. He doesn't notice when he holds it up to his mouth. He doesn't notice as it slides down his throat, and he doesn't even notice when it lands in his stomach, among all his other children. And holding her breath, Rhea realizes she's one. And soon, Cronus will realize as well. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Rhea and Cronus' 6th child, who is named Zeus, is being raised on Crete. But who's raising him? You wonder. Well, he's being raised by lesser gods, tasked to do so by Gaia and Rhea. But perhaps one of my favorite details of this story, and I don't know why I like it, it's not even that weird, but he spent his youth drinking milk from a magical goat named Amalthea. I want a magical goat. The minor gods forced to raise and protect him had quite the adventure on their hands. For one thing, they would need to bang their spears against their swords whenever baby Zeus cried, in order to make sure that Cronus would never hear him. Here's the thing, not to be too critical, but like, I honestly think Cronus would have found it weirder that all the like really unimportant gods would just start making a lot of noise randomly at ungodly hours. And also, don't you think this would just make it a lot more difficult for Zeus's surrogate moms to put him back to sleep? And honestly, this just sounds like a vicious cycle, and I don't think that Cronus was going to be like, I hear a baby crying. It must be the son that I ate, so I must not have eaten it, even though I have no reason to believe this. It's truly the only option, because there are no other babies in existence. Like, really? Okay, but moving on, as Zeus aged, he began to plot with Gaia on how to overthrow his father and take what he believed to be his rightful spot on the throne of the heavens. However, I just want to take this time to remind you that all of these characters are very short and very naked. Do with that what you will. I'm sorry. So, when Zeus came of age, he went to face Cronus. However, Cronus didn't know who he was, as Zeus was disguising himself. But here's the thing, I don't really know if Cronus would have known it was Zeus if he didn't disguise himself, because, like, they'd never seen each other before, but whatever. Maybe these gods have powers I don't know about or something. But Zeus goes to meet Cronus, and he gives him a drink that forces him to throw up Zeus's siblings, which are still contained to Cronus's stomach. But the first thing that Cronus throws up is not a kid at all. No, it's a baby-sized rock. Cronus is baffled, for he can't remember when he ate a rock. But then it hits him. He didn't choose to eat the rock at all. He had been tricked. And this man in front of him was his son. Cronus then proceeded to throw up the other five deities, fully grown and all powerful. These would go on to be the Olympians. Firstly, there was Hera, goddess of marriage, and eventually queen of the gods, but no spoilies. Next, there's Poseidon, god of the sea, Hades, god of the underworld, Hestia, goddess of the hearth, and lastly, Demeter, goddess of the harvest. I really feel like the girls got the short end of the stick here. Like, goddess of the hearth? Really? The great throwing up of the Olympians and the arrival of Zeus then sparks a war between the Titans and the Olympians. It lasts 12 years until Zeus frees Gaia's firstborns, the 100-handed giants, and the Cyclopses, all which Cronus had imprisoned when he had taken power. This tipped the balance of battle in Zeus's favor, and before long, the Titans were defeated and thrown into Tartarus, or the underworld, a fiery pit of hell meant just to hold the Titans. However, before Zeus did that, he made sure to cut off Cronus's genitals, just for good measure. And he threw them into the sea, just as Cronus had done all those years earlier. Now Zeus had really won, and he, Poseidon, and Hades decided that they would share power. So they drew lots to decide who got what. Hades got the underworld, Poseidon got the ocean, and Zeus got the sky, making him the ultimate ruler of the heavens and earth. And for that moment, all was good. But Zeus was beginning to grow fearful. He worried that one day he would meet the same fate as his father and grandfather before him. And it was quickly prophesied that his first wife, Metis, would give birth to a god greater than he. So he did what any rational person would do, and he ate Metis. But she was already pregnant with Athena, and this made Zeus miserable. He was in agonizing pain. Physical pain, not guilt. Specifically in his head. It was so bad that he decided to cut it open. And when he did, Athena, the goddess of wisdom and war arts, burst forth from his head, fully grown and dressed for war. And this avoided the important detail of the prophecy that was that Metis needed to give birth. Zeus then married his sister, Hera, and the two became king and queen of the gods. Throughout history, Zeus would use his thunderbolts to warn and encourage mortals. He was responsible for weather changes, and was the protector of the home and strangers. Together, he and Hera would have two sons, Ares and Hephaestus, god of war and metalworking, respectively. Infamously, Zeus had many affairs with gods and mortals alike. Those affairs with gods birthed Hermes, Apollo, Artemis, and Persephone, and with mortals, gods like Dionysus and heroes such as Perseus and Heracles. It was from Zeus that the 12 Olympians were born, and his rule on Olympus set about a golden age for the gods and Greeks alike. So there's a little bit more to the creation story. For example, Pandora and Prometheus, but I won't get into that right now. If you would like to know my sources and my recommendations, I recommend the YouTube channel The Life Guide. They have these really good docs on Greek gods and myths, and they have a great one on Heracles if you're interested. So I would definitely recommend that. And you know, because I mentioned it earlier, you gotta read The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. It's just so beautiful, I cannot recommend it enough. Thank you so much for listening. Today's episode was a little different from what I normally do. It was mostly just me making fun of Greek mythology, but I had a lot of fun writing and researching it, so I might do more of this kind of thing in the future. I will warn you, though, I think that I will be taking a break next week. It is April break for us, so I have a little, like, break from school, and I think it'd be nice to just not have anything to do. But that's not certain yet, because part of me really wants to do another episode next week, but I just don't really know, so it's kind of up in the air right now. But anyway, just be prepared that that might happen. Thank you so much for listening. I really, really, really appreciate it, and I hope you liked it.